I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You have heard from the challenger, now the incumbent. If you have any questions for Congressman Ron Kind, call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let us welcome Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from the 3rd Congressional District in Western Wisconsin. He is facing Myron Buchholz in the August 9th primary. There is not a Republican running in this district, so the winner of the primary will go on to Congress. Good morning, Congressman Kind.
Well, good morning, Joy. And first of all, let me just thank you and Wisconsin Public Radio for doing this. I know doing candidate interviews isn't the sexiest topic to be doing first thing in the morning, but if it can lead to more informed decision-making starting next Tuesday in the primary and then later in November this year, then I think it's good. So thanks for doing this.
Well, thank you for participating. We do invite all of the primary candidates prior to the primary and the candidates running in the general prior to the general. So listeners can ask their own questions and make up their own minds.
We have important decisions to make. There's no question about it. And I can't think of a more stark decision than who's going to be the next leader of this country and of the free world this November. So I hope, you know, people pay attention because this is significant.
Well, I had to look this up, and I knew you had been in Congress for some time, but Congressman Kind, you have been in Congress since 1997. You are running for your 11th term. Why are you seeking another term in Congress?
Yeah, you know, it goes fast. It really does. But, you know, Joy, I was born and raised here in Western Wisconsin, and Tawny and I have raised our family here, our two boys. I think I have a good understanding of what the hopes and aspirations and the challenges are for the people in this district and throughout our state. And quite frankly, at a time of such hyper-partisanship, how polarized the political system is today and how frustrated people feel with that, I think I bring a more reasoned, pragmatic form of leadership, one that's not afraid to make myself available back home to listen from people, humble enough to know I don't have all the answers, and there are good ideas right here in Wisconsin that I can take with me to Washington. And when I get there, not afraid to talk to my colleagues on both sides of the aisle and work hard to find some common ground so we can get some things accomplished. And then it's not just my way or no way at all attitude. Unfortunately, my opponent feels that way, that if you don't agree with them on all the issues, then the yelling and the shouting starts. And I'm proud in the recent survey that just came out of Congress that I was ranked the 11th most bipartisan member of the United States Congress, 11 out of 435. That tells me I'm doing my job of adequately representing people back home here where they want to see some progress. They understand democracy's hard work. There's a lot of checks and balances. Consensus building is very tough and frustrating, but it's required by our founders in order to make this democracy work and work well for the people. And I think that's the type of measured leadership that I brought to this position in the years.
Yeah. Well, we did talk with your Democratic opponent, Myron Buchholz. This marks the first time since 2006 that you've had a primary opponent in the 3rd Congressional. What do you think about your first primary in 10 years?
Well, first of all, I don't begrudge anyone who wants to run a campaign. It's very hard work, and if they feel they have something to offer in regards to public service, more power to them, and it's good. But then again, I've been focused on my job, and there are a lot of key issues that I have been hard at work on. I happen to serve on the committee that has jurisdiction over Social Security and Medicare. I pushed back against efforts to privatize Social Security and Medicare. There's more we can do to better preserve and protect these very important, vital programs, not just for today's generation, but future generations. And there are opportunities of making progress on that front. Student debt. I've got 6 of the 11 state universities in my congressional district, along with 4 of the technical schools and their campuses, a couple of the 2 years. And I'm very concerned about the pileup of student debt right now and access to higher education, affordability. So I released a plan earlier this year, a higher education affordability plan that directly attacks the student debt issue and comes up with some practical solutions that I'm trying to work into the higher education bill that's coming up for reauthorization. It's one of the promises we've got to keep as a nation, to keep those doors of educational opportunity open to all of our students. And I'm seeing too many of them now being left behind. I see a state with the current leadership that's cutting $1 billion out of higher education. When I look across the river to the Minnesota side, and they're investing $2 billion in their higher education system. And it's little wonder that Minnesota's doing laps around us economically right now because of the decisions that are being made. Yeah. And then I'm going to continue working with Senator Tammy Baldwin on the reforms that have to be made so we improve the quality and the type of treatment that our veterans are receiving in the VA medical system. I think progress has been made. I'm glad that President Obama just signed into law the Jason-Szymkowski Act just this past week. Jason was one of the veterans who died from a drug toxicity a couple of years ago at Toma. And we worked very closely with his family, his wife Heather, his parents Marv and Linda, in order to get this legislation in shape for what it was intended to do. And that's to improve the care and the treatment of all of our veterans, not just at Toma, but throughout the entire system when it comes to pain management and the opioid epidemic. And I'm confident that if it's implemented the right way, this could be a model of care that could benefit the entire healthcare system. Because the truth is, we just haven't done a good enough job of managing pain in our society, and it's leading to this opioid addiction, which can lead to meth and heroin use, which is ravaging most of our communities throughout Wisconsin and throughout the country today. And there are answers to this, but it's going to require cooperation and not just a my way or no way attitude to get anything done.
We'll talk more about healthcare. We have a caller who wants to ask about that. We had a caller who was also interested in gun control issues, so we'll ask about that. We will also ask about the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. And we welcome your questions for our guest congressman. This is one in our series of candidate interviews prior to next week's primary. The primary is a week from today, and Congressman Ron Kind faces a Democratic challenger. He faces Myron Buchholz in the August 9th Democratic primary for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. And our series of candidate interviews continues this hour. We are talking now with Democratic U.S. Representative Ron Kind from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. He is facing a challenger in the August 9th primary election. Democrat Myron Buchholz is challenging Congressman Kind. We heard from Buchholz in our first half hour. Now it's your opportunity to ask Representative Kind some questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's take a call from Vicki in Onalaska. Hello, Vicki.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead.
I have a question about what can be done to strengthen Medicare with the large number of seniors who depend upon that solely for their health care. So in the health care system, what might be done to strengthen Medicare?
Representative Kind?
Well, thank you, Vicki. Very important topic. One thing that we shouldn't do is we shouldn't privatize and create private vouchers that we give a limited amount of money to seniors and say, hey, you're on your own. Go out now in the private health insurance market. Good luck in finding a plan that's going to adequate for your coverage needs and the affordability with it. And yet that's one of the major proposals pending in Washington right now. I think it'd be a terrible idea. I think a better approach is what we're trying to do under the Affordable Care Act, and that's reform the way health care is delivered. So it's more integrated, it's more coordinated, it's more patient-centered. We have good models of care here in Wisconsin that shows exactly what that looks like. You know, the Gundersons, the Mayos, the Marshfields, the Auroras, the Theta Cares. And most healthcare economists keep pointing back to them saying, you know, if we were doing what they're doing, we wouldn't have the healthcare crisis around the country that we do today. And secondly, one that I've been very focused on in providing a lot of leadership in Washington, and that's changing the way we pay for health care. So it's based on the outcome or quality of care rather than the volume of services or tests that are done to us. I think we've seen now through studies and the research that we haven't been getting a good bang for the buck because of overutilization, unnecessary tests and procedures that are leaving patients worse off rather than better off and costing us a lot of money. So I think there's a tremendous amount of cost savings by reforming the delivery and the payment system in healthcare so we get better outcomes at a much better price. That's the best way of protecting and preserving Medicare well into the future.
Thank you, Vicki. Next we go to Cody in Madison. Hello, Cody.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
Good. So, Congressman, I was just curious. You said that the TPP was just kind of misunderstood. What are some of the actual benefits of that?
Well, Cody, I think this is an important trade agreement. And listen, I think there's a misunderstanding. You know, the countries that are part of this Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement, we're already trading with them. And for most of them, we're trading with them with no rules, with no standards, with none of our values in that right now. And that's a race to the bottom. And I'm not happy with that, and I don't think anyone else should be happy with that race to the bottom. TPP gives us an opportunity now to elevate standards to where we are, with labor protections, environmental, human rights standards that are part of the agreement, fully enforceable like any other provision. So if a country doesn't live up to that, then we can hit them with trade sanctions, something that we don't have the ability to do right now. And I think that's an important improvement in these trade agreements. I know my opponents often talked about NAFTA and the shortcomings of it. Now, I agree. NAFTA occurred before me, and knowing what I know now of that agreement, it fell short of the standards that I would like to see in it. It lacked labor protections and environmental standards and the enforceability that goes along with it. But you may recall that when President Obama was running in 2008, he said, given the opportunity, he'd like to renegotiate NAFTA. That's what TPP does, because Mexico and Canada are a part of this agreement now, agreeing to those labor standards and protections. But this is an attempt to level the playing field, you know, for our workers, for our businesses, for our farmers back home here, so they can be more successful in competing in the fastest growing economic region in the entire global economy, the Pacific Rim area. And by the way, if we don't do it, if we're not there providing the leadership and the rules of trade, China will. And we'll be on the outside looking in, trying to compete in a rules-based trading system dominated by China's rules, which, again, will be a race to the bottom. And we're not going to do very well in that race. So I think it's been a one-sided conversation. The presidential candidates, obviously, have been out there poo-pooing TPP. President Obama believes strongly that this is something that we need to move forward on as a nation. And just one final thought. I was just in the Pacific a couple of weeks ago, observing our 27-nation naval exercise. We do that every 2 years to assess the capabilities of our allies in the region in case we need to coordinate functions with them militarily or natural disaster relief. Every admiral in the Pacific Fleet that we met with on their own emphasized the importance of TPP for U.S. leadership. They recognize this isn't just goods and products crossing borders, but it's an important tool in our diplomatic and national security arsenal. And it does benefit, I believe, overall, the economy here in Wisconsin. One out of every 3 acres that are planted in Wisconsin, they're export bound. Yesterday, I was in Prairie du Chien at the 3M manufacturing plant. 600 jobs, good paying, benefits, health care, retirement. 25% of the products coming off their line is export bound. My largest manufacturer here in Western Wisconsin, Train Company in La Crosse, they manufacture highly efficient heating and cooling units. 55% of the products that we're making in La Crosse, Wisconsin, export bound, many of that into the Asian market. And not so long ago, I was up at Darley Construction in Chippewa Falls, owned by Jeff Darley and his family. Over 200 jobs. When I was there, they were literally shipping 20 fire engines into Africa that day. And the following week, they were sending another 15 fire engines that they manufactured there into the Asian market. So this does have a tremendous impact on economic growth and job opportunities. But those are the stories that people don't hear about. And quite frankly, the media doesn't do many stories about the upside of trade and the jobs that are dependent on it. I'm not saying this is the perfect answer and that it's the perfect agreement. But all things considered, I think it's certainly an advancement of what we have right now, which is a race to the bottom, trying to trade with these countries with no rules in place and therefore no standards to enforce.
Yeah, well, your challenger explained a lot of his objections to TPP. He did say this was the biggest issue for him in this race. He claims it will not benefit Western Wisconsin all that dramatically economically. Made some sort of crack about lactose intolerance in other parts of the world. But he also said that this is just going to send more manufacturing jobs overseas. Why is he wrong?
Well, he's wrong because it's already happening under the status quo. If people are happy with product lines moving, then don't support TPP because that's what's already occurring. And the reason it's occurring is because of the lack of trade agreements. We're trading with virtually every nation in the world, except for three, Cuba, North Korea, Iran. But with most of these countries, there's no trade agreement in place, and therefore no rules to enforce, no leveling of the playing field, you know, for our workers, our farmers back home here. And we haven't done that well with that, and people should be dissatisfied with it. But if anyone thinks, after 7.5 years, that President Obama is some sop to corporate America in negotiating this agreement, really hasn't been paying much attention to what his presidency has been about. He believes strongly that this is the right thing to do. I've been involved in working with him and his administration to make sure that we get important things included in the agreement. This agreement has been online, fully published now for almost a year for the entire world to look at line by line. So there's nothing secret in it. It's the most transparent trade agreement we've ever had. And the process is very long and very lengthy. This conversation is continuing, so no one's trying to pull anything over anyone else in this. But I get the fact that people do have serious concerns, and perhaps there are areas that could be strengthened in the agreement. But if all we're doing is waiting around for the perfect all the time, nothing ever gets done that way. I think there's enough progress, enough tools in this agreement that will certainly start leveling the playing field for us and make us more competitive again. In the fastest growing economic region, we need to be there. We need to be there competing. And I'm confident that we can compete, that the quality of work that we have here back home is on the level with anyone else, if not more. So we ought not be afraid of this type of international engagement. And U.S. leadership is very much on the line with all this.
Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, as you mentioned, have been talking about this on the campaign trail, and they primarily are coming out against the TPP, which leaves some members of Congress to suggest the only way that it's going to be passed is through a lame duck session of Congress. Are you in favor of that particular action, having a lame duck session of Congress, or should this wait for the next administration?
No, I prefer to have this debate now. Let's have this discussion right now. The president certainly would love to, but that's all dependent on the Republican leadership in Congress, who controls the agenda and the floor schedule. And I think we ought to be discussing this, having a debate, and call for a vote and let the members fall where they may. But, you know, if my opponent has had the opportunity, as I have through the years, to travel extensively through my district in Wisconsin, visiting a lot of our domestic manufacturers, a lot of our family farms, a lot of our small business owners, I think he would see the real impact that trade does have on Wisconsin and the importance that it brings to our area. And that's why I've been so engaged in this, because of the economic opportunities that it can bring and the opportunity to continue to grow the economy with good-paying jobs. And studies have shown that jobs that are directly related with trade tend to pay about 18% more than other jobs just for domestic purposes. So there is an upside, but it's hard work. It's complicated. I understand that. But we ought to have the ability to at least sit down and talk to each other about this rather than just screaming and shouting in each other's faces.
You know, we're almost out of time. I wanted to get your thoughts. Your opponent also called the Iraq War the worst foreign policy decision in American history. And I asked him what would he do to control terrorism or to fight ISIS. What needs to be done when it comes to that?
Well, first of all, I was never in favor of sending the troops into Iraq. I was supportive of the resolution because it called for reintroducing weapons inspection teams into Iraq. And I felt at the time with Saddam Hussein, there's no way we could do that without a credible threat of force hanging over his head. We knew he had weapons of mass destruction because he used it against his own people. He used it against Iran during the war. We weren't confident that he wouldn't pass this on to some terrorist group to be used in Western Europe or against us. But once we accomplished that, we got the inspection teams back in. I led the effort in Congress with now Senator Sherrod Brown. He was in the House with me at the time, to get President Bush to be patient, to give the inspection teams time to do their job because they weren't finding anything. In fact, we organized a letter signed by 160 of our colleagues telling President Bush, don't send the troops in. The inspection teams are not finding anything. That was the whole pretext for doing it. But my great regret today is that the president viewed war as a convenient option as opposed to a last resort. And it should always be a last resort.
And we're going to have to
leave that today.
That's going to have to be the last question as we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from the 3rd Congressional District in Western Wisconsin. Our series of candidate interviews will continue tomorrow at this time. We're going to be talking with a candidate running in the 7th and also looking for candidates from the 8th.